Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, CPA, is with me once again. Dan, how are you doing this morning?
Doing good, Nathan. Good morning.
Good. Yes, it is a good morning. Happy Father's Day, before I forget it. What's the temperature like there in Houston?
Near 100 yesterday. I think it was 97, 98, and very dry. Just hot.
Wow. Yeah, it's not a dry heat. It's never a dry heat in Houston, is it? Or here in Bangkok. I'll tell you, it's always very moist. But anyway. Well, as usual, I need to mention that if you're listening to this show today and you hear something that you think, wow, that might fit me, that would be cool. Whether it's a tax strategy or whether it's a investment opportunity, there's a lot of new transactions that are happening around the country. And so all I would implore you is to not run out and do it. Why don't you check with your current advisors that understand your facts and circumstances, and make sure that you heard right. Make sure that you're not going to go undertake actions that may be predicated on something that's either incorrect or incorrect for your situation. And Dan and I try to delineate the correct rules from the incorrect rules. On the other hand, sometimes a rule is incorrect just for your facts and circumstances, and it might be absolutely correct for others. And that's true of so many things under the Internal Revenue Code, where the general rule is one answer and the exceptions are a myriad of other facts and circumstances. And, you know, it all goes back to the little cartoon Dan and I talk about occasionally when people in the day of Google decide that they can do research just as well as the accountants can, and they totally overlook the years of experience that gives us a certain perspective that you don't have. And I always use an analogy about the wonderful circular saw that Home Depot sells. It's got the Makita brand on it. Dan, you've got one of those, I'm sure. And like me, you may have almost cut your leg off with one of those before, right? How dangerous power tools are. But again, just because I can go to Home Depot and buy a circular saw doesn't make me a carpenter any more than you being able to buy a wonderful piece of software called TurboTax makes you an accountant. And unfortunately, there's many ways for you to turn left instead of turning right when you should have, and all of a sudden you end up with a doghouse that won't stand up straight, right? So, you know, in the case of your tax return, you may end up with rental properties that doesn't have depreciation or the right amount of depreciation. But in any event, we like the fact that most people that listen to this show are at least based on the client intake forms that I get in, which you can also submit if you're of a mind to, if you'd like to chat with us about your facts and circumstances, because maybe you don't have someone that's familiar, go to our website at baplanner.com, or you can go to the baplannershow.com. We actually are bringing a companion site alongside the primary site just for the show resources. But you could fill the intake form out. You can also schedule a call. You'll see links on the front page, the home page, and we'll be happy to discuss your objectives and see how we might sync up. But in any event, Dan, what's in the news this week? I'm curious. I did not put a bunch of articles out there on the resources page, but I got a few. That first article there in the Texas section, did you read any of that by chance? Just curious.
Yeah, I looked at San Antonio. It looks like it had a decrease in rents, it's saying on the top side of it. I didn't get into the detail of it yet. The that's significant, I think, that rents are decreasing. That's pretty
well. It's significant, but it also is running counter to, I think, common sense. And it always makes me wonder, San Antonio is the new Austin in terms of new folks moving in. I've seen one article that said it was the number one city in terms of influx now in the U.S. I've seen another one that had it at number three. It's still pretty impressive. And I just wonder where at times these, quote, facts come from and what, you know, there's a lot of ways you can, as we know, as accountants, there's a lot of ways to explain numbers to pretty much support any article concept that you're trying to, any point you're trying to argue. But I know this, they've got 16,000 units that'll be added to the current mix before year end, and I think another couple thousand shortly thereafter. And that's a crazy amount of inventory that if that were online, then I might believe that rents had dipped, 3% is what that article said, if I remember right?
Yeah, 0.3%, Nathan. It's 0.3%.
Oh, point.
But it's still significant.
Okay. So. Yeah, well, the fact that it's turning the other way, but
that's right.
That may just mean, well, I'm not sure. Does that mean it's a decrease in the rate of growth, or is that a net negative, you think, the way
they portray it as a net negative is what I'm reading it, but it's over a year's period. The 1.7% decrease is over a 1 year compared to, and it was back in February as well. You know, that 18,000 we talked about coming on in San Antonio some time ago, 16 or they say underway, plus that 2,000 is what you're talking about, but 8,400 of them are going to be ready this year. So that's a lot of inventory coming to market.
Yeah, it is, but it still pales in comparison to the number of people that have moved in recently. It's pretty striking, and I'll tell you, there is, having just visited San Antonio this past December. A couple times, there is construction going on everywhere. All corners of that city are building stuff. It's unbelievable. And I know where my properties are there in the Southtown area, tons of new stuff coming in. And it's always interesting to see that, hubbub of activity, because San Antonio typically isn't like that, right? So
it used to not be, but it seems to be in the last few years it's really gotten to be that way. What'd you tell me one time there was like 30 million visitors a year or something to that
effect? Well, 36 million was the pre-COVID number, and I suspect it's gotten back to that and then some, just based on the traffic we get at our boutique hotels. I mean, it's amazing how full we are on the weekends at times. But, you know, I think in large measure it's because a lot of that traffic is drive-in traffic. You've got a lot of people in Dallas and Houston and Austin that drive over to San Antonio for concerts and ball games and just the Riverwalk. I mean, the Riverwalk is such a huge draw And any
that's one of my wife's favorite cities, San Antonio.
Well, it's a nice place to live. It's not as I say that. I haven't lived there in a while. I've been overseas living, and I like where I'm at. By the way, it's kind of a live and let live mentality here in the big city. You know, 14 million people here in Bangkok. And San Antonio, they don't get in a hurry for anything. It's, you know, I joke with at times, I tell my Houston, Dallas friends that, you know, the average San Antonian is not nearly as savvy as us Houston types, but boy, they won't knife you in the back like we will too, you know. And there's no need to keep up with the Joneses in San Antonio, and they don't care if your yard around your home isn't exactly manicured and irrigated and all the things that will report you to the homeowner association, you know, if you fail to live up to our standard. But being a little facetious, but you understand what I'm saying. But conversely, I know when I'm traveling back and forth overseas, if I'm gone for 2 months, there's a new building almost finished along Beltway 8, or there has been. They're running out of land now. But you would never, never see that happen in San Antonio. It's a work enough to live environment versus living to work, which it seems like is what we Houston folks do. But anyway, well, listen, let's see what else. I just put one article per area. I took what I thought was the top area. There's a nice big new project, multifamily, going up in Savannah, Georgia, for our Atlanta listeners. And then Phoenix had a nice land sale that will accommodate, apparently there's 1,500 units, rental units, and some retail that's planned for that site. And even Seattle, 1,000 unit residential project for Seattle. That sounds like some growth. Although, you know, it's
that sounds like a major undertaking.
Well, for that level of population, it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I tell you what, we're at the 20-minute mark. Let's go ahead and take our first break. And then when we come back, I want to talk about, I want to dive into a topic that we probably ought to talk about every week, which is why or why not invest in real estate private partnership syndications. We'll be right back here in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross and our guest today, Dan Dubose.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A, acquisition, to E, exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Mr. Dan DuBose, CPA. And Dan, you know, we have talked about why we invest in real estate partnerships, private partnership syndications, hitting on assorted spots during various shows. And I thought, you know, why don't we put them all together and spend a few minutes just going down the list. And I picked three of the most, what I think are the major advantages, and three disadvantages, or what can be advantages and disadvantages. And that's part of the magic and what we do, which is we try to help people understand what they're going to be signing up for on this project. Every project is different. And, you know, for instance, someone that's retired and needs consistent cash flow will not invest in a transaction that's only going to have one payout at the end of 5 years when they sell. They'll want something that's more of what we would call a yield play versus a value add, where there's cash flow because it's highly occupied the day you buy it. And you're not having to put a lot of money into renovations or rehab to get the rents up to market. They're probably close to market, or they can be with some light, I'm going to call it renovations, even though it might be something like adding smart home packages, electronic packages, or putting in a bark park, a dog park, etc. In any event, the three advantages that I would suggest apply are, number one, of course, as an accountant, I'm going to say tax benefits. And Dan, tell us a little bit about what the tax benefits are on several fronts within a real estate private partnership. Some of it's real estate generally, but applied to a private partnership, and in conjunction with the other advantages, they really become pretty magical. But
you must be talking about depreciation.
Well, that's one of them. That's a big one. It's not as big this year as it has been. Explain that comment as you're explaining depreciation.
You're thinking about the decrease in the immediate write-off from 100% to 80%.
That's right.
The
tangible component.
Right. Yeah, some of the assets can be written off the year of up to 80% in the year 23, decreasing, 20% over the next 2-3 years to zero or get. But there's some talk now, Nathan, about that being reinstigated, reinstituted, or, you know.
Yeah.
We still got several years to talk about it, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, don't forget. Never forget, Dan, there's a lot of Congress people, both sides of the aisle, that own real estate. Okay, so let's not write off the concept of tangible bonus depreciation. Now, maybe it won't be at 100%, but I tell you what, it's kind of gotten baked into all these syndicators' plans. You don't see any private partnership that's foregoing cost segregation, you know, tag teamed with bonus depreciation. And just for the uninitiated, what we're referring to is a concept that it had been around. You know, bonus depreciation existed, but not for secondhand or used assets. So none of these old apartment buildings that the syndicators were buying, you know, beat up and under market in terms of their rental rates could be accelerated as quickly under the old rules. There was cost segregation, which did get you some acceleration, but it didn't allow you to apply the shorter life, i.e., 5 minutes after you buy it, you qualify to deduct the used property of certain property classes. Or when you're spending new money doing renovations on certain expenditures, you get an immediate write-off, whereas under the prior rules, you would have had to depreciate it over 5, 7, 10, or even 15 years, if I recall, Dan. Those are the four categories. But in any event, you're absolutely correct. There has been talk. Of course, it's primarily on only one side of the aisle. It's the Republicans. And yet, look at what they just – well, I guess you could look at it both ways. I would say it's pretty amazing what they pushed through on the debt ceiling. I would also say it's not what we thought. It wasn't as good as we thought it would be ultimately. But, hey, if there were two sides that moved, I'd say the White House moved towards the center more than the Republicans did. And I understand we all wanted a deeper cut in spending. But you got to understand, when we compare historically what's always happened in these situations, you can't be too disappointed. Disappointed, yeah, a little bit. But I'd say it's fairly remarkable. And yet, I'm going to tell you, somebody that was around back when the balanced budget amendment passed, Dr. Phil Graham, you know, the A&M economics professor, I think he was, who went on become a professor or a senator. And I forget who he teamed with. Who was it? Was it I can't think. It wasn't Graham Rudman, was it? It wasn't the Graham – I mean, not Graham Rudman, Warren Rudman, I believe. It wasn't – was it the Graham Rudman or Rudman Graham?
Man, you put me on the spot there. I can't
remember that. That's been too long ago. That was the 86 Tax Reform Act, and I suffer from both short-term and long-term memory, it seems like. I'm not sure there's a difference, actually. But anyway – the balanced budget amendment, when's the last time you heard that term? And it passed. Oh, well, it wasn't an amendment, I guess, was it, Dan? I don't think it rose to that level. But yeah, it was Clinton a piece of legislation. Say again?
Bill Clinton got one of those done. What was that, 20 years ago now or so?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it didn't pass. I'm saying it didn't matter. That's what I'm saying because it literally was if nothing had happened. They didn't balance the budget that I recall. Maybe 1 year. I don't think it actually happened. And there was a scant reference to it this time around because the debt ceiling agreement isn't anywhere near a balanced scenario, right? And you watch, let's just watch how much gets jammed through the few exceptions, the military spending and whatnot, that will cause the deficit to be a lot higher than what they think it's going to be. And I'll almost bet you the Republicans will be leading that charge to spend the money because they spend as much or more as the Democrats. It's never a question of how much, it's how it's going to get spent. That's the difference between Democrats and Republicans. And I don't know. But anyway, so Dan, the tax treatment's the first perk of syndications. Now, as part of the tax treatment, what's the other category that gets preferential treatment? Or not necessarily preferential treatment, it's just the way the tax rules work. We tax what, Dan? Do we tax every dollar you put in your pocket, or are some of those dollars not subject to tax, at least right away, on a real estate deal? Like, what do we get quarterly or semi-annually?
Oh, you're talking about cash distributions that you get
That's exactly correct. Is that typically not taxable immediately until maybe you've gotten too much of a good thing?
Some of that cash is going to come to you not taxed. I mean, you get a flow out of it, get a cash flow out of it without having to pay tax on it. This year, it may eventually come down where you're going to, but for each distribution, there's not necessarily a tax due, but you can spend it. You can spend that cash flow.
Yeah, unless you've gotten more cash out than your cost basis, which is a complicated topic that we probably will never discuss on the air. But
probably
unless
because
you've gotten
you don't hold them that long most of the time to get to that point.
Well, not only that, you're pulling out money, so you've got a debt big enough that's it's replacing the one you're paying off, because part of your cost basis is your share of the debt. And that's a big deal in the real estate taxation world, right? So preferential treatment, not necessarily, again, preferential is just the way it works out under the rules. But you couldn't take a distribution out of your consulting practice, likely, unless you had some really major depreciation. I mean, that's the thing. When you're buying an apartment building, what would you hazard a guess, Dan? Probably 80% of your investment is a depreciable asset of some kind. At least 70, 75. Now, some of it may be 27.5-year property, but there's quite a bit of it that fits in that 5, 7, 10, and 15-year category that can be written off literally on day one. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, so tax benefits is the first advantage. The second advantage, Dan, I would suggest, is the ability to cherry pick the type of real estate you want to invest in, both as to the type, meaning we can invest in a hotel, a medical clinic, a industrial park, you know, retail center. Just go out on crowdstreet.com and look at all the different classes of real estate that there are syndicators somewhere in the country putting deals together. It's pretty remarkable. And so you can cherry pick not only the type of real estate, you can cherry pick the location. You may want to get on some of the action in Miami or in Kansas City, wherever you feel the market's headed or the profits are coming, you've got the ability to pick and choose. And that's, again, pretty nice advantage over you going and buying some single-family properties. And if you're not in those far-flung areas, you're going to either have a hard time managing them or you're going to have to pay somebody, one of the two, which that's not the end of the world, but it's not like being able to have a syndicator, they're on the site or having hired a property manager, et cetera, to do the heavy lifting. So big advantage. Let's see, what's the third? There's other advantages, but I'm restricting the list to three here. Dan, what does the passive get out of investing in these partnerships that you just can't get away from with single family? What's the big one?
Probably somebody else does the work for you. Effectively, what's happening? You talking about ranging the debt, investor, finding other investors for the deal, finding tenants to fill your apartment.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Even finding the deal, locating the property, figuring out if it can be underwritten to still make money. And, getting the debt. Think about it. When's the last time you bought a rental house without having to go to a lender or convince an owner to owner finance it? And then you're going to personally guarantee it. And in any case, for the most part, unless you've got some significant leverage that you can put into play. But that's a big deal. Just think of it this way. You don't have to get out of bed in the morning to go run that project. Somebody else is doing that. And, yes, they're also going to show up on the disadvantage side of the list here in a second. In any event, that's a big advantage, and that's why we suggest any of us old guys need to invest passively. Why, you know, why not enjoy life and let the utes? By that I mean anybody under the age of 50, right, Dan?
Under the age of 60 these days for me.
Well, that's true. I'm old under both of those definitions, then, if that's the case. But anyway, we're going to let them get out of bed early and go run or manage the manager if they decide to engage a property manager. And that's a huge difference between single family and multifamily. There's other differences. We talked last week about how a multifamily project provides financial value. How does that happen? And it's much different than the way a single family property trades. And we're not going to go into that on this show, but we'll consistently follow back, because that and this third advantage of having somebody else do all the heavy lifting, I mean all the heavy lifting, are the two major advantages as I see it. And I guess that the way they make money could easily be on the top three as well, but I figured, hey, we talked about that last week. Okay, what are some of the disadvantages, Dan? Do you have any idea? You don't know what I've got on my list here, but I know you can think of some of it. What would you think?
About before is the lack of control. One of the things you get a discount for maybe is for the lack of control that you have over the sponsor, let's call it, or over the project itself.
Right, and when you refer to a discount, you're referring to a discount for purposes of valuing your ownership. Like, for instance, if you were going to do a Roth conversion, you've got to figure out what the fair market value is, and that's one of, I don't know, up to 20 or 25 private company discounts that you would have to consider. And I'm not the one telling you that. It's the SEC that forces the syndicator to disclose the risk factors on any given transaction. And you'll see those in the PPM somewhere towards the front of that document, and you'll see a list of 20 or 25 factors that supposedly, if you look at the Rule 5 instructions that the attorneys must follow as promulgated by the SEC, they need to consider the fact that you on a real estate transaction involving rental units, you may not be able to rent them all. Does that ever happen, Dan? I can tell you as an owner, it definitely happens. And I can tell you, as I've said before, there's no piece of real estate in the world that doesn't look better with a tenant in it, okay? And when you don't have a tenant, your holding cost are very painful. And so it's things like that that the SEC wants you to be aware of. And, you know, you may not be able to, here's a current one, you may not be able to refinance when you projected that you would. So you get money out, you know.
That's
huge right now. Your operating costs may not be as shown in a pro forma, like your insurance premiums going through the roof as they are right now. They've tripled or quadrupled. Taxes would be another one. And in any event, what Dan was alluding to is that lack of marketability is what we call that. You can't sell your interest in one of these private partnerships when you want to do it. Okay? You only when the syndicator says, okay, I think it's time. And typically, their incentive hopefully is aligned with yours. They're not always the case, and that's why we've got a real burr up our saddle about the next disadvantage, which is what, Dan?
Fees,
that's right. The fees that are charged and the level of promote that's charged by the syndicator. And it's not just, I mean, there's a couple of corollary or related issues that tie into fees and promote. Timing is definitely a big one, right? Are all the fees front loaded, which in most transactions is often the case, or at least a portion of them, or they later in the deal? In other words, does the passive get any of their return on investment in the same timeline or time frame that the lead is getting his or her, or is it front loaded with fees and then you wait around to get the crumbs that are left as an investor?
You'll see it all over the board, but you know, the ones you want to find are the ones that are that take care of the investor first, I think. And those, you really have to study a deal, and that's one reason why the Be a Planner even exists, I think, is because there's somebody's got to be in there digging for you, for the investor, because the sponsor knows where he is. The investor is the one that's got to go read all those pages and study the deal and see if it's really a deal for him to do.
Well, you know, unfortunately,
what's in it for him, for the investor?
Unfortunately, you know, when you go join a real estate mentor or investor platform these days, a club, and you know, we've got a couple of bigger ones, I guess, here in Houston, and unfortunately, they don't really teach you how to analyze PPMs and operating agreements. And I'm not saying they don't have webinars about it. What I'm suggesting is, if you're looking at four possible transactions and you got to pick one or maybe two of them for your money, they're not going to really help you decide which two are the best ones. That's not their role, because if they did that, they would be cannibalizing their own, because it would hurt the other three guys or gals that were trying to syndicate. So you don't really get somebody that's willing to call a spade like we've been accused of. And I would tell you, our sole mission in dealing with clients on syndications is to help you understand, to train you, if you're willing to do the first level of analysis, in understanding what you're signing up for on this specific transaction, and to determine the timing of people taking money out of the deal, as an example, to determine what those fees are, to determine whether your distributions are treated as a return on your capital as opposed to of your capital, and not just determining the style, but then determining what does that do to me in terms of the net throughput that I'm going to get. What about when the promote changes because the syndicator got to a certain IRR and then the promote scales from 20% up to 50%? How do you assess the impact on you of that? And essentially what happens is your capital is consistently diluted by these high fees. And we're working on an illustration that we'll put out on the Be a Planner show.com soon that shows the sensitivity of that scale on the promote and some of the fees, and you'll be amazed. And it's not to say, I don't want to be too negative about fees. There's reasons to pay fees, but it's not on day zero as the syndicator's walking out of closing. There shouldn't be $2 or $3 million out of the investor capital. In my opinion, my humble opinion, that hasn't been earned yet. And if you're going to take $2 or $3 million out, Mr. Syndicator or Ms. Syndicator, as the case may be, there should be a, depending on the level you promote, let's assume you've got a 20% promote, well, then the 80% owners, that would be the passives, should be getting a pro rata distribution as well. I mean, if we're going to be, you know, fair is fair, and before you tell me how much work you've done to put the deal together, I'll suggest to you it pales in comparison to the amount of work that our clients have put in to save the retirement money, in most cases, that they're using in your transaction. So, you know, I just, the fees are a real concern when they're not, when the timing is not aligned with the interest of the passives. Okay. So, Dan, let's see. Oh, the third one. And I don't know that I have part of this categorized right, but I notice when we've got clients that have 20 or 30 K-1s, Dan, because they're in 20 or 30 deals, their fees tend to be what I would call, I'm not going to say they're unreasonable. I'm just going to say it takes money to make money, basically, right? And when you do a tax return, when you look at everything we have to report to the IRS, and it's gotten to be a heavier lift here in the past 2 years because now you're obligated to report certain things that we didn't have to before, that's what I would say going to be the upper end of a tax return fee. And, you know, we've got people that actually have more than that. And I'm telling you, I hope those K-1s are in real estate and not oil and gas, unless those are some real gushers, right? Because we presume that most, if you're in that many transactions, you've certainly drank the Kool-Aid and understand the above average rates of return that can come out of these transactions. Anyway, well, I have gone way past the break time. Let's take a quick one, and we'll be right back. And, Dan, I hope you've got a transaction that we can fly through just to take a real quick peek at something in the remaining time. So let's take a break, and we'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
You are a reacher, so reach down. Reach out and lead me. Guide me and keep me in the shelter of your care each day.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, CPA. Dan, what are we going to talk about for the last 6 minutes or so?
Yeah, it looks like Dallas, Fort Worth, and that area is pretty popular these days. We see a lot of stuff for CrowdStreet, and then there's other areas, other quarters that have lots of activity up there, be it small units or are larger units. But there's one that I thought was really interesting that I think significant. It's in Fort Worth. It's how many units is it? 200 plus units, so it's not a little deal, but it's they're really proud of the fact that they've got a 3% over their SOFR, the secured overnight fund financing rate. You know, so they've
3%
got 3%
plus, huh?
Over, yeah. And they've got it capped at that for 2 years. But, man, that works out right now at the current SOFR rate of 4.7. That comes into a 7.7 interest rate. Now, that's getting mighty high from what we've seen in recent past. I don't know if that's their capped rate or not, but it's somewhere around that, I would say.
Oh, okay. So you're not sure if it's variable or if it keeps adjusting.
No, it's capped, but they're, and they're closing the deal in this month. So right now, Friday, the rate was 4.72% SOFR.
Wow.
So, and
what was the cap? What was the cap rate, or at least the represented cap rate on acquisition?
I couldn't find the cap rate on there and digging into their deal. It's only a 36-month deal, they're saying, but they've got a, they got a 3-year interest only with 1+1. So, and they have to buy that. They're buying the cap rate at for 2 years going into it, but then they've got another year that they'll have to buy again for that third year of their 36-month hold projected. It's I think, you know, the fees are something that are kind of coming home to the sponsors, because this one has a going into an acquisition fee of 75 basis points. You know, we're usually seeing a lot of 1 or 2% acquisition fees. They do have a rather high construction management fee of 7.5%, and that's on about a $8 million rehab that they're going to put into a $76 million deal. So it's some significant fees on the top side, or as they, some of it's earned as they do some construction management. They're earning some of it, but they're getting a pretty healthy fee for it, I believe.
Yeah.
It's a sizable deal, 300 per unit. No, 191 all in. 191 all in cost.
How old is the property, Dan? Did you have that detail handy?
No, it didn't. I didn't see that on the top side of it when I was first looking at it.
Okay. And what's
it's not
rental?
An old one.
You have the rental income increase they're performing by chance?
It's very minimal, because they're acting like there's, or talking like there's very little that needs to be done. It's probably just the dog park kind of stuff that I did look at that detail. But, it's a simple stuff. It's a pretty nice looking, pictures are very nice looking project.
Yeah, and what about the exit cap? Did you say it? I may have missed it.
Yes, and that's the other thing that's very important. It's 1.6. It's rather low for our standards here anyway.
Wow. Wait a minute. 1.6? That's like better than a T-bill. That can't be.
That's right. That's what they're saying, 1.6. I thought, well, is that a
That's got to be a syndicator mistake on whoever put the deal docs together. That that's like, I don't know what to compare it to in terms of stable
3 years.
Asset.
Yeah, 3 years, 36 months. Now, they do have cash flow coming in the first quarter of 2024.
As you would expect. Yeah, on a yield play. Well, that's interesting. Let's see, Dan. We've got a couple minutes. What else? Anything else? I'm sure they've got some cost seg and bonus depreciation built into this deal. They talk about that. Any projection on a $100,000 investment? How much tax write off that would generate? Some of the syndicators are showing that on each of their.
I think that's a
deals.
Significant one to have, but I didn't dig into that part of it. That's a good point. I'll make note of that, because that is important from the long haul. You know, there's another one that's a small unit that is using a cap rate of 5.35, so they're starting to come around to a more reasonable cap rate. This is a small unit, so less than 100 units, so it's...
Well, on the bigger deal, if you're buying it and you've got an interest rate of 7%+, I would assume that unless the interest rates go way down, which they're not, you would have a cap rate in 3 years at least the same level, right? You would think?
At least, or near it.
So that's got to be a misprint. But where is this still out on Crowd Street, or is this?
It's a new one out on Crowd Street.
Huh, that's interesting. I'll have to take a look at that one. Well, listen, let's say goodbye for the week. We're right at the end, and Dan, as usual, greatly appreciate your getting out of bed early to come talk about real estate and taxes, and we appreciate everybody that tuned in and look forward to seeing you same time, same place, or speaking to you same time, same place next week, and if you have any questions, continue to email us, info@npross.com. We'll get to me, and then take a look at our website if you want to set up a call. It's right at the top right. Dan and I'll be happy to talk to you about your objectives and see if we can sync up with what you're trying to do. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.